Welcome back to Rethinking Supply Chain. I'm Diana Chen, and I'm here with your host, John Abrams. And we've got special guest CJ Tekku back with us once more. Just to refresh your memory, CJ is the founder and CEO of Catsy, a product information management platform for mid-sized brands and sellers. And today, CJ, we want to talk to you a little bit about how retail supply chain has changed in the last few years, and also how brands and manufacturers are adapting to these changes.
Hello, Dan and John. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, it's good to be here with you again. And I know in a previous episode, we talked about how Catsy came to be, how you ended up in Chicago. And what I'd like to talk about is, you know, you've had Catsy for a number of years. I met you, geez, back in my shot farm days. So I had left Cardinal Health to try and do good in the digital supply chain. And so I probably ran into you maybe 7 years ago or so. And so I'm curious, even if Catsy, and I think Catsy was around even before then, I don't know exactly when.
Yeah, but I think we met in it was a phone call. It was 2016.
Oh, geez. Wow. Okay. So just in that period of time, I think things in retail supply chain have changed. And I think there's more change to come. But I'm curious how you and how your product sees that change. And where do you think we're headed in retail supply chain? I think, you know, a few years ago, people that were selling product management systems had to kind of go in and explain them to people. And I get slides now where people will send me a picture of a screen at a big event, and it'll say, if only we had a content management system. So I think it's becoming content management, something that brands and manufacturers more fully understand and appreciate. And I'm curious, what is the arc of change that you've seen since forming Catsy?
Well, great question. So the way I look at it is that there's been like a few waves. Let's say we break it down into two or three, maybe three specific waves of change that I see from a product content standpoint. And the reason I use the word content is just so it includes data and images. Because if I said product data, then, you know, that would leave out a big part of it. So the first way for me was to improve search. A lot of these online retailers and marketplaces required more specifications, more product attributes. And these were category-specific attributes. This is to facilitate, you know, the faceted search on their sites, as well as being able to make the product easily discoverable, or you want your customers to be able to find the product to begin with, right? So, but discovering that product is the very first thing they try to address, to get that customer or the prospect to that product was the first challenge that a lot of retailers ran into.
And they ran into that kind of in the early stages of e-commerce, if you will, because you needed to be able to, and I remember this, people would talk about needing a hierarchy so that a consumer could continuously filter down to get not just apparel, not just shoes, but the actual color, size, fit for that individual. And I remember those discussions, you know, search was driving everything back in the day. Mm-hmm.
Right. So that was the first wave. The second wave was, now that the customer is on the product page, how do we put a convincing, compelling page together so that prospect or that customer finds all the information they need, and then they convert that product into a purchase or into the shopping cart? So that second wave was about getting a number of images per product. So it was all about, let's get five photos, let's get five features, let's get great descriptions, let's get this romance copy to be really robust. And that was the time frame when there are a variety of requirements from retailers asking for or validating content so it fits certain lengths. It fits all the different metrics. It's almost like a method of grading the content itself on that product page. So that was the second wave. That also led to things like enhanced pages, A-plus content, and content that is presented in different ways for easy comparison. And it led to a variety of different improvements.
So I don't know if a lot of our listeners, especially people who are pure supply chain people, may not know sort of the marketing implications of A-plus content. Could you just expound on A-plus for a second?
Yes. So an A-plus content page is basically a page that really sells and talks to you. Instead of looking like a standard product Amazon standard page, A-plus is unique to Amazon. They coined the word. But in general, if you want to include all retail channels, it's called an enhanced page. So this enhanced page has more to it. For example, you go into the product, you'll see the lifestyle photos in it. You'll see the romance copy broken down into benefits, with each benefit having its own photo. And then it may have a nice comparison chart. So they compare all their models. They'll say, this TV is 40 inches. This one has Wi-Fi on it. This one has this extra mount on it. So it basically takes that one product and it really talks to you with video, with rich content, rich text, and a lot of beautiful formatting that really pulls you into a little nice sales page. So it's almost like a landing page with much richer content in it.
So the first wave then is just basic hierarchical search. So how do I find a product? The second wave, how do I create content that is so compelling that it draws users in the same way that a physical environment would draw them in? And so that's A-plus and some of the other attributes. I think you mentioned a third wave. What's that?
Yeah. Well, I feel this is all about even richer content. This is videos and taking that to the next level, and spin photos and going category by category and really going down to getting as much rich content around that product. Like, for example, we're seeing a lot of retailers rolling out, making the spin photos a big push today, like right now in 2020. That's one of the most developing areas. And getting more installation guides, getting all the help, all the things that the customer needs, not only at the point of purchase, but also a little bit overlapping the post-purchase installation part of it. Some cases, the how-to videos. How do you take advantage of this? And then building a little bit of social and community around it, and taking that product page and then adding more to it that goes across. And you see that with Shopify announcing recently with Walmart. So basically what they're doing is, now take this product page and let's spread it across, and let's take that product page and go into the post-sale cycle. And I just think that we're just going into that era of getting that repeat customer to come back to the product.
Well, building a relationship, and you know, I like your breakdown of these three stages, where the first one, that's almost it's almost pure tech. How do I create a hierarchy that I can search? The second one, a little bit more engaging with things like, you know, pictures, and then your third stage is really trying to create, I don't want to say virtual, the word's so overused these days, but creating a corollary for the consumer to the physical in-store experience. So if I walk into certain stores, I know that they're sprinkling magic fairy dust in the air that makes me more open to want to buy products, and all sorts of other creative things, like, you know, pumping up the oxygen or the ambient music or what have you. So all of these things that retailers have gotten really good at in the physical space, it sounds like in this third wave you describe, it's the retailers trying to use spin or any other sort of, immersive tools to really draw that consumer in. And then I like your piece that you almost kind of toss in as a throwaway to create this durable experience. Like, you know, hey, I want to learn how to use the new garage door opener that I bought. So here's the how-to video or how to get more out of your product. That connection is really fascinating to me because it underscores something that I think we've been seeing for several years, which is the need to not make that cash register, the checkout, the end of the experience, as has become common in e-commerce. Like, you know, you buy the product, and then that's the end of the connection, or worse, it's not the end because the product you bought shows up in an ad on a web page the next day, which I don't know if you hate that as much as I do. I already bought the product. Stop trying to sell me on the product. But I do think that piece you throw in at the end about creating that durable connection to the consumer, that is, I've studied supply chain for decades. That is the most interesting part to me, because you're suggesting that by drawing the consumer in, we now have a supply chain that persists over time. And that, I think we can't quite understand the value of that. But I just out of curiosity, do you throw that in as truly a throwaway, or do you believe that creating that persistent connection, do you just believe that is an assumed or a given?
So I think the lifetime value of a customer is very important, right? It doesn't matter if it's a one-off purchase or if you have a repeat customer. The lifetime value is very important because the amount of marketing and this establishing credibility that it takes to get that first purchase, in a lot of cases, again, it depends on B2B, B2C, but in a lot of cases, if it's done right, then you can get a lot more out of each customer relationship if you keep the long-term horizon of nurturing and getting this customer in and then helping them succeed with that product. So that lifetime value is much more, much bigger than, I don't know the exact number. I think it really depends on the industry you're in. But for B2B products, that lifetime value is a lot, lot higher than consumer products.
And I
that's
agree.
The focus. Yeah, that's the focus. That's where I think a lot of companies, progressive companies or brands are going, is building that lifetime value and focusing on that. Not just now today, this one shopping cart is very important. Of course, it's important, but so is future purchase.
Future purchase, and I would, we wouldn't have time to go into it today, but it's not just the future purchase. It's I know there's another lettuce type recall underway. So we're talking in mid July here. And I forget what the nasty is that's in the lettuce supply now, but it's, if you have a persistent relationship with a consumer, you can alert them to things that they wouldn't otherwise understand. And I don't think your business and not my business, that's not the focus of what we do, but I do think we are, what you do at CATSI, what I do at Venzi, these are cogs or components of a more persistent end-to-end supply chain. And I do think that there are aspects of that are really transformational in terms of how we as consumers interact with the supply chain that I don't think we've been connected to for ages and ages. So all good stuff that we've been talking about, and I love your perspective on this. Curious, what is the role and where does CATSI go as you see this evolution as we've talked about? Where do you go? Where do you fit with your customers, say, over the next 5 years?
So we want to continue to evolve as a platform. for brands and sellers to not only centralize and create a single hub for all their product content, but also have the visibility into the retail channels as well as their own storefronts. So for example, having the right API platform so you can query and understand where the product is currently at, what is the quality of the content, what the product pages look like, what is the difference between what we have in CATSI versus what's being sold on that retail store, and also the ability to really seamlessly update and change that content and continue to build on the workflows that are needed within the organization to keep that content up to date, not just outward facing, but also inward. So there's better efficiencies and better notifications and better processes within these different departments, like marketing department. It could be image workflow. It could be copywriting workflow. It could be how do you fine tune for various search keywords. It could be workflows of bundling and merchandising the product, and also serve across geographies, across different regions, across the world. So that's kind of the direction. That's the next generation, or that's the direction we're going in.
Well, that's really cool. I'm thrilled that you're in Chicago. Venzee has invested more in Chicago. We have folks here now. We're moving a bit out of Canada and more into the U.S. space, where, in my view, a lot of the supply chain innovation is happening. And I'm so glad you're in the space, and I'm glad you're in Chicago. And as things, we're recording this in mid-July, as things return to a more normal, more social environment, I hope to see you around in Chicago. There's much more that we could talk about, and I want to in the future, and I hope you'll come back. I hope you enjoyed your time with us. If folks want to learn more about CATSI and what you guys do, certainly you have a depth of knowledge that is significant. But if folks want to engage and learn more about CATSI, how do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, check us out, catsy.com. That's CATSY.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, CJ, for being here. Thank you guys for listening to another episode of Rethinking Supply Chain, and we will be back again soon. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Supply Chain podcast. It's brought to you by Venzee, intelligent product content distribution for enterprise commerce. Learn more and say hello to us at venzee.com. That's VENZEE.com.